This is number 0009, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Yes, it is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0009. And coming up on this edition of the show, we'll meet cartoonist Al Bigley, who has a new character, a new superhero called Geminar.
I think if you're a fan of just good superhero comics, you'll like it. It's got a little bit of the flavor of Green Lantern, Marlin's Captain Marvel, things like that. And just a really exciting read, I think.
We'll also meet a British teenage rock climber who fell 60 feet from a cliff and landed on his head. His name, Peter Holder.
A couple of months ago, I had a rock climbing accident. I actually fell about 60 feet and landed on my head. I had to be air rescued to the hospital and was unconscious for about 15 minutes. And I lost my memory for about 2 weeks either side of the accident.
It's been said, people named Peter Holder have hard heads. Also, the return of Andrew Vizakis, the Night Sky Guy, remembering Soupy Sales, and Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Hey, enough of this being guilted into giving. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on right here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And this week's guest slater is Keith Perrin, who is the host of The Happy Station Show. He lives in Taipei, where he does the show. He has resurrected a show that was a huge hit back in the day on shortwave, and it's destined to be a hit once again. You can find both the shortwave and terrestrial broadcast times on my website, plus a link to archived editions of the show he's done. Again, it's The Happy Station Show, and if you don't find it on my website, but you will, just Google The Happy Station Show. And thanks again to Keith Perrin, who not only did the slate for this program, but he's been a supporter of this show, not only in its online edition, but back in the day in radio. So I thank you for that, Keith, and continued success with your program. On to the Stuff File. We have lots of strange and weird and bizarre and twisted stories for you as usual. So let's get right to it, shall we? We start off with the story of a dead body. You know, there's a lot of dead bodies that show up on the Stuff File program. Here's one of the weirder ones. The dead body of 75-year-old Mustafa Muhammad Zayed was left on a Los Angeles balcony for several days because neighbors thought it was just a Halloween display. Zayed's body was found slumped over a chair on the balcony of his third-floor apartment with a single gunshot wound to the eye. Neighbors had seen the body nearly a week before but hadn't called police because they thought the corpse looked like a Halloween dummy. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department is treating the death as an apparent suicide. Now, what I'd like to know is just how badly does Los Angeles smell? That's what I need to know. Because, are you kidding me? Does Los Angeles smell so bad that nobody notices a rotting corpse for a week on an outdoor balcony that people pass every day? That's just not normal. On to Italy for our next story. We go to Palermo, as a matter of fact. A Sicilian builder transferred from prison to house arrest tried to get himself locked up again to escape arguments with his wife at home. Santo Gambino, who is 30, did time for dumping hazardous waste before being moved to house arrest outside the Sicilian capital of Palermo. Gambino went to the police station and asked to be put away again to avoid arguing with his wife, who accused him of failing to pay for the upkeep of their two children. Police charged him with violating the conditions of his sentence and made him go home and patch things up with his wife. Boy, isn't that cruel and unusual punishment? Going against maybe the Geneva Convention? I don't know. Speaking of people who seem to have issues with their spouses, here's another one in a similar vein. A woman in Saudi Arabia is seeking a divorce after discovering her husband's nickname for her. Seems that she was listed as Guantanamo in his cell phone contacts list. She found it when he left his cell phone at home one day and was none too happy about being compared to the U.S. detention center in Cuba. She says she now wants to end their 17-year marriage, but said she might settle for a substantial financial compensation from her husband and stay married to him. Sure, honey, I hate you so much I secretly call you Guantanamo, but here's a big pile of cash to convince you to stay married to me. Yeah, that's gonna work out. On to Stony Point, New York. A man in Stony Point was so fed up with pesky telemarketers that he beat one up. Daniel Adler felt harassed by phone calls from Sears Home Improvement telemarketers, so he finally set up an appointment to meet with one. When the worker arrived at Adler's home, he punched him in the face. Okay, I've never gotten into a fight in my entire life. Not once. I've never actually hit someone. So I don't necessarily agree with the guy's actions about punching out a telemarketer, but I understand. I don't agree, but I understand. That's all I'm saying. Okay, one of the things we rail against on this program, we often talk about the situation with political correctness and the fact that it goes way too far. And usually it takes place, by the way, in Britain, which we refer to as the nanny state. And this is another classic example thereof. Are we so PC now that Humpty Dumpty can't even have a great fall anymore? The BBC has been criticized after rewriting the classic nursery rhyme to have a happy ending. The last line, "All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again," was changed for a kid's show to say, "All the king's horses and all the king's men made Humpty Dumpty happy again." Tom Harris watched the show called Something Special with his sons, age 3 and 5, and said, "For goodness sake, kids should be exposed to real life a bit, not cosseted away. We need to stop this moronic activity. Let them see colorful and violent cartoons and let them be children." Apparently, in the show, Little Miss Muffet was also revised to where she made friends with the spider rather than running away. But a BBC spokeswoman said the small change to Humpty Dumpty was for no other reason than being creative and entertaining. Really? Was it either? There was an old woman who lived in the shoe who had so many children she didn't know what to do, so she visited Planned Parenthood and got a bunch of free condoms. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill dialed 911 on her cell phone, and Jack was airlifted to the nearest hospital. He's now in stable condition, and doctors say he'll be fine. This was fun. Moving right along, an Air Canada flight was diverted for the ridiculous reason that a passenger stole beer from the beverage trolley. The flight from Vancouver to Fort McMurray, I always want to say Fred McMurray, to Fort McMurray, Alberta, made an emergency landing in Kelowna, British Columbia, where police arrested the 23-year-old thief. Air Canada spokeswoman Deborah Williams said, "We have a zero-tolerance policy as it concerns unruly passengers." Police said the passenger had stolen beer from a beverage trolley and then tried to flush the empty cans down the aircraft's toilet to dispose of the evidence. He now faces charges of causing a disturbance on an aircraft. Okay, I understand the concept that he needs to be arrested because he's committed a crime and he shouldn't do that. But does the plane really need to be diverted from its original flight? When you're on that flight and you're heading to Fort McMurray, and you end up in Kelowna, and you're supposed to meet people at the airport either to pick you up or to make a connecting flight, are you going to be happy to find out that the reason why your flight was diverted is because someone tried to flush a can of beer down a toilet? Really? Are there no RCMP officers in Fort McMurray that can arrest them there once the plane lands? Do you need to make a stop? Is he that dangerous? I don't know. While we're on planes, and while we're talking about some people on planes that we don't like, let's delve into that a little bit. So, who are the people you think we hate sitting next to on a plane the most? Nope. It's not the crying baby. It's smelly people, fat people, and people who cough and sneeze. At least that's according to a new survey by the folks at Travelocity. Almost 50% of us said passengers with poor hygiene are the worst, while 30% dislike people who cough and sneeze, and 15% don't like sitting next to overweight passengers. Almost two-thirds of us think seat kicking was the rudest behavior displayed by passengers, followed by loud talking or swearing, and reclining the seat all the way back. Bringing larger than allowed carry-on luggage was deemed the most annoying thing a passenger could do while boarding, while people rushing to get off the plane was the worst thing passengers could do when exiting. The online poll included 1,592 Americans and Canadians. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File, here on the Stuff File program, talk about a tough crowd. A woman in Stamford, Connecticut, was beaten up by six other women after singing karaoke at a sports bar. Apparently, they did not enjoy her rendition of Adios Le Pido by Colombian crooner Juanes and pushed the singer to the floor before punching her and chipping her tooth. Well, I've always said on this program that karaoke, I believe, is the Japanese word for tone deaf. So, there you go. Again, I'm not into violence. I wouldn't push her down. I wouldn't knock her over. But I understand. Yeah. On to our first guest on the program here on the Stuff File. You know, on the line with us right now is Al Bigley, who we had on our old radio show about a year ago when we talked to him about his book, which is called Draw Comics Like a Pro, Techniques for Creating Dynamic Characters, Scenes, and Stories. Well, he's got a new project out right now called Geminar, and it's also available as an app on iTunes. Al, thanks for being on the show. Bring us up to date with this new superhero that you've come up with that people can now get as an app on iTunes.
This is actually a comic that I created with my writer friend Terry Collins. And we took it to Image Comics just a few years ago when we got it published. We always thought it didn't receive quite the audience it should have. It kind of came out quickly and, you know, came out, I think, in March, which is not a good time for comics. So recently we hooked up with the people from Ethermedia and iRemedy, and they do comics made especially for iPods and iPhones and things like that, which I'm told is the new thing. You see, I'm kind of old, I guess. I still read my comics on newsprint, so they had to kind of bring me up to speed. But, yeah, it's a story of a cosmic superhero who is a very exciting Silver Age-type adventurer, but we've got some elements in there that kind of hint toward conspiracies and things not being what they seem. And right now, the first issue is free on iTunes through Ethermedia, iRemedy. And it's getting good reviews so far, lots of excitement. But I think if you're a fan of just good superhero comics, you'll like it. It's got a little bit of the flavor of Green Lantern, Marvel's Captain Marvel, things like that. And just a really exciting read, I think.
Now, from what I understand, Geminar is an astronaut who takes one last mission into space, only to find himself hopelessly lost and alone?
Right.
Is that accurate?
He's got that whole angle. Yes, exactly. He kind of takes on the mantle of superhero very reluctantly, which is kind of an interesting way to go with this, because he's also trying to unravel, like, who gave him these powers, and then can he use these powers to get back home, and all the time uncovering different plots and behind-the-scenes goings-on to point to a possible conspiracy and maybe a little more than what meets the eye. That's it, yeah.
Now, the whole concept, the whole idea, rather, of doing this in an online version, was this something that that took a little while on your part to wrap your head around? Were you keen on doing this initially, or did you have to be kind of talked into it?
No, I wanted a bigger audience to see the book, and when I was approached, I had to do a little research, because I've heard of online comics and even the phones appearing on the mobile media, but I had to see exactly how it was presented. And in fact, once I agreed to this, I had to go and kind of refigure a lot of the pages art to fit on the new format, because, you know, the iPhone lets you see things either in a standard panel size, either horizontally or vertically. And I think they've also got, you know, Zoom technology, and you scroll and you go back and forth. You have page markers. So really, it is different from reading a comic book, obviously. But all the advantages of just having your comic in front of you are there, too. You can go back and forth and reference things. And so, yeah, I did a little bit of studying, a little bit of, you know, bringing myself up to speed. But I think it's great. I'm happy that folks can see this in any media. I'm really proud of the work. Carrie and I both are very proud of it, and we're just happy that it's finding a new audience this way.
How do you think the internet will change comic books or how you create comic books, if at all?
You know, that's interesting. I'm thinking about that a lot, because when you rework the material to work on something like an iPhone or an iPod, it is a different experience. You are controlling more where the reader goes next, where he scrolls next. Again, they can still go back and forth. They can still use the technology to read as they want. But it is a bit of a different experience, because it's almost like a movie presenting you with each scene. Now you look at this. Now we're going to show you that. We're going to move your eye this way. And it's kind of changing the storytelling and what can be done with the storytelling, just because it's a different media. Now, as far as changing comics, as far as people buying them and accessing them, I really don't know yet. I think it's still too early. For years now, they've tried to put comics online and find a way to make them pay, basically. Are people going to download them for money? Will they be happy paying a little bit just to read them over lunch? Now we've got this mobile media where people feel like, hey, I'll read a comic book waiting for my bus. I'll watch a movie or an episode of my favorite show. And that's something I don't think people expected, that aspect of being caught with your laptop or your iPhone or iPod, and then thinking, yeah, I'll enjoy a game or a comic or something like that. And I think that's got room for growth, especially. But it's anybody's guess what's going to happen. It's so new still, and people are still working with it in every way, storytelling and making the availability much more seen across the board. All those things have to be considered.
How frequent will Geminar be coming out?
Well, you see, it's actually a rare comic that has a beginning, middle, and end, so we serialize it into three issues. First one's now free on iTunes. But it does read, it can be read as individual issues. It does have those beats, those story arc beats. The next issue should be coming up within a week or two on iTunes, I believe, for 99 cents each. But, again, it's interesting that it does have a satisfying wrap-up. Now, it leaves things open for a sequel, of course. You know, we're not dumb. So, we got that going on. But it's different that way. It's not really made to be an ongoing thing for the next 10 years. And, you know, it's actually got a contained story, just broken up into three parts.
And for old fogies like myself who might want to find a dead tree version, is that also possible, or will this only be online?
Right now, just available through Ethermedia here. You know, there are some copies still from the Image printing floating around, but they are getting kind of scarce, because I only have a few, and Terry's got some, and collectors I see have some every now and again on eBay and things like that. Because we came out with Image a few years ago with just a big special with the whole story, like 72 pages and all of it in a nice done-in-one package. But they are getting hard to find, so this right now is the only way, as far as I know, to get the Geminar story, sure.
And for people who want more information, as you say, they can go to iTunes, of course, but there's also your website, right?
Right, they can go to albigley.com, and you'll see a button there. My Facebook page, there's a Geminar Facebook page. Just type in Geminar, G-E-M-I-N-A-R. iRemedy, which is the letter I, and Remedy, R-E-M-E-D-I. They have all their titles listed. They also do many titles, from religious comics, adventure comics, historic and educational comics. It's amazing what they offer. Mm. And gosh, just do a Google search for Geminar. I mean, it's everywhere. I'm very, very pleased.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So in addition to that, I initially started by mentioning the fact that we had you on our program, our old radio show, last year, talking about your book, Draw Comics Like a Pro. How has that been doing since we last spoke to you?
That's doing very well, actually. It's in bookstores everywhere and on Amazon.com, and I'm very pleased its success, and I've planned another one. We're just kind of in the talking stages for a sequel to it, but I am very pleased. Absolutely.
Excellent. In the meantime, people can check out Geminar. They can go online either to your website at albigley.com. They can go to iTunes. They can find you on Facebook. And as you mentioned, there are several ways you can find it. And I will put the links in on my website so people can find it as well. I thank you very, very much, Al, for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
Thank you so much.
Al Bigley, who is the co-creator of the new superhero Geminar, that you can find as an app on iTunes. As mentioned, you can also find information at Al's website, which is albigley.com. That's www.albigley.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Still to come, we'll meet a British teenage rock climber who really has a hard head. Also, remembering Soupy Sales and Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. But first, let's check in with the Night Sky Guy.
Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
This week, we start heading into prime viewing time for those breathtaking heavenly shows we call the Northern Lights, or Aurora Borealis. For some yet unknown reason, they seem to peak during the fall months, so really this is the best time to try hunting auroras down. These colorful events start off when the sun throws off a giant cloud of supercharged particles that barrels towards Earth. In just a matter of a few days, it arrives at our planet's doorstep, and our magnetic field then funnels these particles into the upper atmosphere through the north and southern pole, and this creates a glowing light show that appears to dance and twist in the sky. Now, these eerie but dramatic overnight displays can become some of the most memorable moments in sky watching. And you don't have to be in the far north to see them either. This time of the year, there's usually one or two displays that you can catch from mid-northern latitudes, like places like Toronto and sometimes even as far south as Atlanta, Georgia. Now, the best time to catch them is usually around midnight, and you look towards the northern horizon for the first signs of a ghostly curtain of light to appear. For alerts on upcoming auroras and other stargazing news, check out my website, thenightskyguy.com. I'm Andrew Fazekas, and until next time, clear skies.
This is the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet Peter Holder. Also, remembering Soupy Sales, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, and of course, a Stuff File Idiot of the Day. We have more stuff for you right here, right now. It now appears you can't walk around naked, even in your own home. In Springfield, Virginia, 29-year-old Eric Williamson walked down to his kitchen at 5:30 a.m. to make himself a cup of coffee. He was naked at the time, and it seems an unidentified woman who was walking with a 7-year-old boy at the time saw him through a window, so she called police to complain. Williamson told reporters, "Yes, I wasn't wearing any clothes, but I was alone in my own home and just got out of bed. It was dark, and I had no idea anyone was outside looking in at me." But the police actually arrested him, and he now faces up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine if convicted. He plans to fight the charge and says he may sue the local police. You know, one of the interesting things about doing this program, I do it now from a studio that I have in my home, and I've often referred to this show to friends as it's radio without pants. And before you get that image in your head, yes, I'm wearing pants. I'm just talking about the fact that, you know, I don't have to leave the house anymore to do this program. But yes, I'm wearing pants. Although, the show is young and there's still some time to go, and who knows where the mood might take me. Yes. Anyway, moving right along, we go to Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls police feel like it ought to be pretty easy to find this particular suspect. They're searching for a man who attempted to steal a bottle of rum and some soft drinks at Lewis Drugstore. The man was described as being about 20 years old, over 6 feet tall, 300 pounds, and wearing a black dress. His escape vehicle was a red four-door Kia. Now, what I want to know is, can a guy who is 6 feet tall, 300 pounds, and in a black dress actually fit into a red Kia? It should be kind of hard to find, or actually easy to find, depending how you look at it. Elsewhere, a very strange robbery went down in Indianapolis. A 23-year-old man entered an Advance America check-cashing business and pulled out a gun on the clerk. The clerk began crying and talking about God. At that point, the gunman told her how he had a 2-year-old child to support and asked for prayers about overcoming his hardships. So the clerk and the gunman then spent nearly 10 minutes on their knees praying together. After their amens, the guy got up and finished the robbery by stealing the clerk's cell phone and $20 from the store cash register. The whole thing was caught on videotape, as was the guy's face. Police are looking for the religious robber. And what's in a name, you ask? Well, in Portsmouth, Hampshire, there lives a young man whose life isn't easy because of his name. It wasn't always this way. He was born back in 1989 and had 8 peaceful years of being a schoolboy with what at the time was a fairly ordinary name. But when he turned 9, things changed because that's when a book came out that happened to have his same name. A book called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Harry Potter of Hampshire now says introducing himself is akin to being in a minefield. He's had to show his girlfriend his passport so she would believe him when they first met, and he says, after 12 years of it, I couldn't count the amount of times I've heard someone say, "You're a wizard, Harry." He now works for the bank Lloyd's TSB and says, "I'm the only person in the building who doesn't have to use my full name when I'm talking on the phone." Indeed, it seems life was easier back in the early 90s when people simply thought that he had been named after Prince Harry. So, there you go. People who share other people's names. What are the odds? What are the chances? Well, you know, actually, I am a member of a very exclusive group. A group of people whose name is Peter Holder. As a matter of fact, there's a Facebook group that includes just 8 of us right now. Now, while some of us have a bit of notoriety either by being in the media or doing other things, there's one young fellow who lives in England, and he's done quite a bit, and he's only 18. He joins us on the line right now. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hello, Peter. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
No problem.
Now, I have been accused in the past of having a very hard head, but you've lived up to that task because you had an incident in your life not too long ago which could have had dire consequences, correct?
That's right. Well, I'll tell you what happened. I'm a keen rock climber, and a couple of months ago, I had a rock climbing accident. I actually fell about 60 feet and landed on my head. I had to be air rescued to the hospital and was unconscious for about 15 minutes, and I lost my memory for about 2 weeks either side of the accident.
Wow. And I understand that the people who found you at the bottom of the cliff, and I'm looking at a picture from the Daily Mail of where you were doing this rock climbing. I understand people who weren't down to see you thought for sure you were dead.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Well, quite naturally, if you saw somebody fall 60 foot, you'd probably think the worst. But luckily, the only injury I sustained was a broken wrist. And I suffered slightly from amnesia, but that was about it, really.
Now, obviously, since you're a rock climber, as we alluded to, you're obviously very athletic. Not only did you do that, but following that experience, you actually unicycled across the UK?
Well, that's right. Because I got airlifted from the crag where I felt really guilty because I know how much air ambulances cost to run. So a friend and I decided to do something quite unique to raise money back for the air ambulance to cover the costs for my accident. So we got our heads together and thought, what's quite a unique thing to do, which will cause quite a lot of publicity and therefore raise quite a lot of money. So I came up with the idea of learning to ride a unicycle and unicycling the width of England.
Now, wait a minute, you said learning to ride a unicycle. So you didn't know how to unicycle before you did this?
We didn't know, so we started completely from scratch. It took us a couple of months. My friend knew how to ride a unicycle, but I started from scratch.
Wow. Now I've seen pictures of this, I believe, on your Facebook page, and this is not a standard unicycle. The wheel is very, very big.
Yes. Well, to start learning, we got a beginner's unicycle, which the wheels are very small, actually, quite easy to ride. But if we were going to cycle 150 miles across England, we were going to have to buy something a little bit more substantial. So we bought these unicycles with a 36-inch wheel, and they go a lot faster than the normal beginner's unicycles.
How fast can you go?
I didn't really time it, really, but it's quite fast. Just a little bit slower than a normal bike.
And what kind of adventures did you have in unicycling across the UK?
Well, we had a few punctures. The weather wasn't too good to us. It was raining quite a lot. Halfway through the ride, just as our morale was dropping, we were faced by a 7-mile steep uphill slog right to the summit of a mountain halfway across the country. That was a bit of a morale. It hurt our morale a bit, but we fought on through, and we got through it.
Now, I mentioned, I think, at the top of that you're relatively young. You're 18 years old. You've already fallen off the side of a hill. A cliff, actually. You've unicycled across the UK. I know you're an adult, but you're 18. What do your parents say?
I try and keep most of it quiet, actually, because if they knew I was doing all the rock climbing and all these extreme things I do, then I'm pretty sure they wouldn't agree to it. So I try and keep it quiet. They don't really know much of it.
Well, keeping it quiet, I'm over here on the other side of the pond, and I'm seeing your pictures and reading your story, so I have a feeling I think your parents know what's going on.
They have started to suss it all out, yes. They do ask me some very strange questions.
Okay. So what's the next adventure that's up for you?
Well, we are thinking about cycling from the Eiffel Tower, which is in Paris, and to the Blackpool Tower, which is a famous landmark in England, and that's probably about 1,000 miles. And we're thinking about doing that on a unicycle, but it's all talk at the moment. No plans as of yet.
We should mention that this is not a lifelong thing that you're doing. You're also a student. What are you studying?
I'm studying primary education. I am hopefully to become a primary school teacher at the end of the course.
Wow, you'd be a primary school teacher who would have a lot of stories to tell the kids. That's always a fascinating thing.
Definitely. Well, we only live once, so you want to be on your deathbed and look back at your life and think, yeah, I had a good life.
That's
what I want to think.
Judging by the picture of that cliff that you fell off of, you might live twice.
Yes, definitely.
Now, in addition to this, as I said, I found you on Facebook, and you've actually started a group on Facebook, a group of people whose name is Peter Holder.
That's right. I heard somewhere that there are 38 of us in the world, and we're two of them, so only 36 more to find.
And I know that there are, I think there's 8 of us on the website and on Facebook, and I happen to know another who's not there, so there's at least 9 we know of now.
Could I ask how you know this other person? Is it complete coincidence, or is it because you share the same name?
It's complete coincidence. I found him. He's been on our radio show in the past, and he's in the media as well. He's a magazine publisher in Australia.
That is quite a coincidence.
Yep. So there are plenty of us out there. Anyway, continued success with all that you do. And as I said, Peter Holders generally tend to have hard heads, and you're the person who's proved that the most so far. Try and keep your feet on the ground when you can, and enjoy that unicycling, too. It seems like you're having a lot of fun with that, and good luck with becoming a primary school teacher.
Thank you very much.
You have a whole life ahead of you, sir.
Thank you. Well, it's very nice to see you, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, bye now.
18-year-old Peter Holder, who has his whole life ahead of him, and he'll enjoy it with that name. On my website, you'll find a link to the story in the Daily Mail that I mentioned, so you can read up on his survival story of falling off the side of a cliff. This is one tough kid. The website again is peteranthonyholder.com. That's www.peteranthonyholder.com.
This is the Stuff File.
want to spend some time talking about Soupy Sales. Soupy Sales, the loose-limbed comedian whose goofy skits, slapstick antics, and pie-tossing shenanigans made him one of America's most popular television stars of the 1950s and 60s, died on October 22nd at a hospice in the Bronx, New York. He was 83 years old. He had a variety of health problems, but the cause of death was not reported. Sales gained early fame in the 1950s as the host of a daytime children's TV show in Detroit and always had a strong following among young people who appreciated his groaning puns, silly dances, and runaway train of thought. At various times, he had three live shows on national television which featured Sales chatting with puppets and guest stars, mangling the language or making outrageous puns in a segment called Words of Wisdoms, and on practically every show getting smacked in the face with a cream pie or two or three. He was sometimes suspected of telling suggestive jokes on what was ostensibly a children's program, but Sales adamantly denied that and had a standing offer to pay $10,000 to anyone who could prove that he had done so. No one ever collected. His stand-up comedy routines in nightclubs, however, were more crude and risque back in the day. On the old radio show I did, we had a chance to talk to Soupy Sales back in November of 1998. Now, I've had the chance to talk to a lot of celebrities over the years, and quite a few of them were in their senior years. But when I talked to Soupy, I thought back then that he didn't have too much longer. He didn't sound that healthy. But that was 11 years ago, so I guess I was wrong, since he did hang in there for more than a decade. We had a chance to talk about a lot of things, including his irreverent kids program that was adored by kids and adults alike. Here's a little bit of a clip from when we had him on the show back in November of 1998.
One of the things that was always interesting about your show, it was a show that was designed supposedly for children, but you had an audience that was hip. You had an audience that was not just...
Well, you know, any time you put on a top hat or sweater, bow tie, you're considered a children's performer. But I just would not do the funny show I could do, you know. We had more adults watching it than kids, you know.
Mm-hmm. But doing a show with a lot of jokes for kids, but also a lot of double entendre, sometimes got you in a little bit of trouble, didn't it?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I was supposed to say a lot of things I didn't say. The only thing I did say was at the time I told the kids to go in their mother's and father's pocketbooks on New Year's Day night and send me those green pieces of paper with guys with pictures with beards. Which was, to me, one of the funniest minutes in the history of TV. I was the first person to be suspended on TV.
But I think what's also very interesting is the amount of people who rallied support, fans who picketed in front of the television station to get you your job back.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of people threw paint at the station eggs, and that was my family, you know. But they knew it was a big joke, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me in my career, in my life, you know. So anytime you get fired or you're released, people, you know, or come to your support, you know.
As I mentioned earlier, you had a very, very hip television show. Even though it was considered a kid show, you got some pretty interesting guests.
Well, yeah, well, it was Frank Sinatra's idea to get hit with a pie. People asked me, said, does he know he's going to hit with a pie? I said, if he did, that'd be a right turn on I-95. You know, no, it was his idea to help me, which was beautiful because he was a beautiful man. We miss him very much because it's his idea of helping me. And once he came on, everybody wanted to get hit with a pie. Because up at that time, I never thought about hitting anybody with a pie except myself, you know.
Right.
But he called me and he said, I want to come on to your show. He said, he's a big fan, which I was thrilled because, let's face it, he was the epitome of show business. And when he came on, everybody afterwards wanted to, Tony Curtis, Jerry Lewis, Burt Lancaster, everybody. So it was his way of helping me. He helped so many people. He was a beautiful man.
Soupy Sales was a beautiful man himself. He will be missed. But a lot of what he does still lives on. When you see someone like Pee Wee Herman, at the base of it is a little bit of Soupy Sales. When you watch the monologues of Craig Ferguson on CBS at late night, there's a little bit of Soupy in there too. He definitely has left his mark on the comedy and entertainment scene. Soupy Sales, dead at 83. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
I got to tell you, Peter, I'm very, very tired these days. I don't know, I just kind of burn the candle at both ends. And, you know, my candle doesn't want to be burnt at both ends.
What have you been doing?
Football.
Football?
Yeah, last weekend, Missouri and Oklahoma State in Boone Pickens Stadium. Got to meet Boone Pickens.
Ooh.
Garth Brooks was there, too, but quite frankly, Boone Pickens I kind of thought was more interesting to talk to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nice to talk to Boone Pickens. Talking about energy, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I do. I figure if he's made $3 billion with that, maybe I can have some of the leftovers. Who knows? Who knows?
There you go.
Oh, boy. And this weekend, it's Texas and Missouri. The Texas Longhorns, hook 'em horns.
Excellent.
Something like that. That's what I'm doing. That's why I'm keeping busy. But I'm keeping stuff up with you, too.
Well, that's good to hear.
Oh, yes, I am. Lots of good funny stories here as we battle our way through the fall. And I'm ready. I'm rearing to go.
Well,
you just tell me when.
What do you got for us?
Oh, okay. Let's see. Dateline, Woodlawn, Tennessee.
That would be the Volunteer State.
Yeah, one of my neighbors, you know.
Yes, I know. Yes.
Tennessee.
Yes.
You know, got to tell you, Peter, firefighters in Woodlawn were called out to a report of two men on fire.
Wow.
Daniel Stevens' work partner, Donald Lindsay, says the two were, they were just fueling up their work truck when Stevens flicked his lighter to see how full the tank was getting. Anyway, the ensuing explosion left both men with second and third degree burns on their upper bodies, but me and the other guy are up and around, said Lindsay, and it wasn't as bad as what it sounds.
Oh, I think it was.
I think it was, yeah. Here, hand me a match. I think my gas tank is empty. I love that.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Dateline, Tazewell, Tennessee.
Would that be the home of the taser?
Not really.
Okay, well, still a volunteer state.
Still a volunteer state. Should be the home of the taser, though.
Yeah.
It should be. If I was running that company, man, I'd have the headquarters in Tazewell, Tennessee.
There you go.
Oh, boy. Anyway, it wasn't exactly the type of behavior you'd expect to see from the good church-going folks of Tazewell. First, there was a fist fight at the Edwards Community Missionary Baptist Church, and now the building is burned to the ground. Another fire story in Tennessee. Coincidence?
Mm.
I think not. Pastor Claiborne Gibbons said, "That's God's house. It's no place to throw fists or shoot people or talk about shooting people. It's for blessing the Lord." The church had stood for some 70 years or so, but a recent division by 30 members led to fisticuffs. Church member David Lovin said, "It just all broke loose." Then he added, "When I heard that the church burned, it just broke my heart because, you know, that's where my heart was." So clearly it did break. Police are still investigating the fire. In the meantime, the congregation is meeting in a church member's garage.
My.
I think it's not a very big congregation.
I'm guessing it isn't.
No, I guess not. But they get to sit in cars. That's cool. Dateline, Waterloo, Iowa.
That'd be the Hawkeye State.
Sure would, yeah. Another one of my neighbors north of here. the clerks at the five-star snacks and more convenience store. Yeah, five-star snacks and more. They were somehow under the impression that they were being robbed for the third time in recent months when a suspicious man walked into their store. So, rather than wait and see what the guy was going to do, they just put the money from the cash register in a bag and threw it at him. Now, it turns out he was drunk and rambling on a bit, but he had no intention of robbing the joint. And after they threw the bag of money at him, he left it on the ground and walked out. He was arrested, though, for public intoxication, disorderly conduct, and interference. Interference in what? Well, a robbery that didn't exist, probably. He didn't rob anything. They threw the money at him. He left it there. He walked out.
He just walked out. So what is the crime?
Well, you don't want to be drunk in public, so maybe that's it. But, you know, there's a big difference between being drunk in public and geez, I mean, robbing a place. Come on.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
There is. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but there's a line that's got to be crossed there, okay?
And apparently it was crossed.
Apparently. Let us move on.
Let us.
Dateline, Columbia Station, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye, oh.
There's that song. Yes, the Buckeye State.
I used to live there, you know.
One of many.
Yeah. Hey, Peter, you want to know what it's like to have a vampire wedding? Probably not. Well, 61-year-old Jack Holsinger and his 44-year-old bride, Connie Spitznagel, made it happen in Columbia Station, Ohio. They both donned full vampire regalia for their scaramony at a haunted house near Cleveland. The couple chose the location because it's operated by the same people who own a campground where they met. The groom arrived in a coffin inside a hearse, and the coffin was carried to the altar by 6 pallbearers. Minister Greg Kopp was dressed as Jason from Friday the 13th movies. After the vows were exchanged, he ordered Holsinger not to kiss the new bride, but instead to bite her on the neck. Aww,
isn't that sweet? Yeah.
Oh, man. There's sick puppies out there, you know?
Can you just imagine the wedding photos?
Yeah, I know. Take a look at this. And Vlad, would you please go over there? Thank you. Okay. There's Eddie Munster. Dateline, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
The Sooner State.
I was in Broken Arrow, in fact, just a week ago.
Oh, really?
Does anybody remember Steve Rogers' pitch for the Expos?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He was from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Ah, of course, yes.
See?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, 52-year-old Dakai Liu will have to face the music after allegedly beating his roommate on the head with a harmonica. According to the police report, the victim was in the bathroom getting ready for work when Liu burst in and started beating him with the instrument. When police got there, the roommate was covered in blood from cuts to his head and his face, and when they tried to arrest Liu, he allegedly resisted and headbutted one of the officers. So they pepper sprayed him. Now, Liu's roommate later told police that, I don't know what his problem was. Well, officers took the harmonica as evidence and say it's the first case of attempted harmonicide in Oklahoma history.
Now, I don't know. There are various harmonicas of various sizes. The one I'm mostly familiar with, I think the ones we've all seen on television and whatnot, are the standard size, which kind of fit if you hold your two hands together in the palm of your hands.
Yeah, well, this one was shaped. It was kind of a little bigger. It was more. Think of it this way.
Yeah.
As a submarine sandwich.
Okay, because I was about to say, if you're going to beat someone with a harmonica, why not just use your fist? Not that I'm into fighting in the first place.
No, of course I understand.
Yeah.
But he did want to attempt harmonicide.
I guess so. Well, you know, if someone were decided to trying to beat me with a harmonica, I think I'd be, well, pretty pissed.
Angry.
Yeah.
I'd be pretty angry too. And,
yeah.
You know. I'm angry just thinking about it.
I can tell.
And you know what I do when I get angry?
I know, yeah.
I take keyboard in hand and I write a 2-minute tirade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Peter, it's time to lash out. And on this show, I want to rail against people asking me to contribute to causes. No, I'm not talking about a cold call from an organization looking for a charitable donation. And I'm not railing against the Salvation Army people with their Red Kettle campaign as we get close to Christmas, though these people can be a pain in the butt as well. But seriously, what I'm on about are the people who bother you at the checkout counter of a grocery store. as you put your groceries on the conveyor belt and have each one, every little can of vegetables and every little piece of meat rung up, the person behind the counter will ask you to contribute to the cause du jour. Perhaps it'll be something along the lines of, would you like to contribute a dollar to breast cancer awareness? Or would you like to contribute a dollar to the Easter Seals campaign? As Groucho Marx sang so eloquently in the movie Horse Feathers, whatever it is, I'm against it. When I buy groceries at a supermarket, I don't want to be asked at the checkout if I want to give to a cause, no matter what the cause, no matter how good a cause it might be. I'm in the store to buy groceries. That's it. If I want to give money to a cause, put an unmanned contribution box in a place where it's easily seen, and it would allow people the opportunity to drop a dollar or two into it. But I don't like people being guilted into giving by some young high school student who asks in a cracking voice, sir, would you like to contribute a dollar to the Save the Whales campaign? Stop it and leave me alone. And while we're at it, maybe you should take a second look at those guys with the red kettles.
Ooh, another bah humbug moment.
I know, there's
Steve
so many.
Walsh. Yes.
I know, I can't help myself, Peter.
I understand. I just want to mention people can find you online at www.missourinet.com, where you can also check out the blog that you do at MissouriNet. And in the meantime, sir,
yes,
say those three magic words.
You mean hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, but we have just one more item to get through, and that, of course, would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Two men were arrested in a suburb of Melbourne, Australia in September for allegedly scamming four local businessmen out of a total of $160,000. But the scam may reflect worse on the victims than the perpetrators. Usually when we do this kind of story, it's the perpetrator who's the idiot of the day. But this case, no, that's not the way it goes. The victims, who might have considered themselves savvy entrepreneurs to have earned as much as $160,000 to begin with, were somehow persuaded by the alleged scammers that bills of currency can duplicate themselves if soaked in a secret chemical overnight. The perpetrators demonstrated, and I'm doing air quotes right now when I say demonstrated, the chemical's power by a sleight of hand, probably involving a hidden $100 bill, that after soaking appeared alongside an original $100 bill. For those of you who are listening, who thinks that this actually can work, and you want to try this out chemically yourself by doubling your money, you will need bleach, baby powder, and hairspray, because this is apparently what the perpetrators had recently purchased. Why would someone, business people, who obviously have some sort of business savvy in making money, think they could duplicate their money simply by soaking it in a secret chemical agent overnight? Why would someone be that gullible? One reason and one reason only. They're idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You can check out my website, peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on all of the guests and all the things we talked about on the program. You'll find it on the What's On page. All you have to do is just find the corresponding date and podcast number. In this case, the podcast number is 0009. You can email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com, and you could also find me on Facebook. The Facebook account is facebook.com/PA Holder. You can find me on Twitter as well. That's twitter.com/PA Holder. That's it for me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you'll join us next time on the Stuff File program. Share it with all your friends. Get the word out. Until next time, bye-bye.
been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.